But I just want to have a conversation to better understand them, because I think that we've removed the personal, you know what I'm saying? And I think that it's important to really understand who a person is, because you know me, I'm no fan of Jasmine Crockett personally. And I think that she's very fake. I think that she's new from ATL, you know, grew up in an environment that wasn't what she's trying to portray herself to be. But we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Let me bring up my friend, Sheldon Daniels. Sheldon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a good day, beautiful day. Besides all the pollen and the allergies, man, I got no complaints. I'm happy to be above ground.
Man, I'm happy to be speaking with you today. So I'm excited to kick it with you. I'm excited to ask you some questions. But before I get into asking you whatever it is that I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind introducing yourself to the people and letting them know why you're here.
Well, I'm attorney Sheldon Daniels. I'm a 38-year-old. I'll be 39 on Friday. Dad, husband, I'm a small business owner, I'm an attorney, I'm an army vet. I'm really just a regular guy. I'm not really a politician in the traditional sense. I'm just a guy who saw a problem, who saw a need, and I've just stepped up to meet that problem, confront that problem, and bring some solutions. And thankfully, luckily, by the grace of God and just the support of all the people all over the country, I've managed to see a little bit of success so far since we've set out on this journey. And I'm hoping we can carry this all the way through to November 3rd of 2026 and win that seat.
So you know that, I mean, you're stepping into the lion's den now, right? Because politics, as I've been navigating and being a content creator and being able to see a little bit behind the scenes, politics is wild. It is one of the, I think is a lot wilder than the streets. How do you, what made you make the decision to then run for Congress?
Being a dad, you know, whenever this thing is, I've always been raised to kind of see society as, you know, something bigger than myself that I needed to contribute to. But when I have children, you know, innocent kids, and you know, when you have kids, you meet other parents, right? Your kids have friends and classmates, and you start to develop this network. And now that I see the world kind of through the lens of a dad and a husband, someone who needs to, you know, prepare, you know, my house. When I have a new baby, I have to go around and kind of safety proof and child proof my house thinking in the future. That's how I'm kind of looking at the world. And I saw the trajectory that the radical left was trying to take our country. I see what these globalists are trying to do to the world abound. And as somebody who has the ability and kind of the know-how to at least get in there and learn how to become effective very quickly, I just felt it incumbent on me to step up and do that.
How many children do you have?
I technically have four kids. My wife and I, we have three children together, but I became a dad at 14 years old. So I have a 25-year-old daughter, not really a kid, but as far as kids, I have a 7-year-old son, and we're not going to talk about that. Cause, you know, she wants to have our own private life.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as far as children, I have a 7-year-old son, Sheldon Jr. I have a 5-year-old daughter named Nova. Okay. And my wife and I just welcomed our third child, Alira.
Congratulations.
Who will be 1 month old on my birthday. Yeah, thank you so much.
So wait a minute. So how many kids do you plan on, how many more do you plan on having?
You know, as many as God will bless us with.
Now, I think that that's awesome, because I think that one of the things that plagues society is that we have a lot of people that are not situationally aware. And I don't think that they really understand how impactful it is to have children, because these are the future leaders, which is one of the things that really plagued me. And that I was, man, it was difficult for me to even have a kid, because similar to what you was just saying, I was looking at the trajectory of the world and how things were going. And, you know, it was just like, man, I can't imagine having more than one child. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is your mindset originally growing up, because me personally, I was raised in Detroit, Michigan, raised in a church, but I was raised in a traditionally Democrat household. You know, all of my family is still Democrat. All of my brothers and all of that stuff, they are, even though they have a conservative mindset, they are still taught to vote blue, right? And I was, it took me a little bit to kind of get out of that, to start thinking for myself. And I would say probably within the last, 8, 9 years was when I kind of snapped out of it. Were you traditionally raised in a similar environment? And if so, how were you able to divest yourself and then start to move more towards conservative values or being a Republican?
Absolutely. I was born in the mid 80s. I was born in 86 to a single mom, government housing, the projects, that whole nine. And so, coming up in that environment, there was absolutely a lot of us versus them. I was raised with this perspective of, my ancestors were brought over here by force. You know, everyone hated them when they got here. White people in America were pro-slavery, and the people who weren't actively involved with it just didn't care about us. And so I definitely came up with that kind of chip on my shoulder growing up in rural Texas, where I kind of got to see some of the vestiges and some of the crumbs of the old Jim Crow era still kind of left over and lingering in my town. For example, I was the first African American attorney to open up an office in my hometown since 1930, since William J.
That's
Durham
pretty awesome. Got his
office. Yeah, he got his office burned down during a race riot, similar to what happened in Tulsa. And, this is Thurgood Marshall's really good friend. And so, for me to come back home and to reopen shop, I think just kind of speaks to who I am as a person and how I want to change that narrative. But to answer your question, how I got out of that, it was just life. Growing up in my neighborhood, it was a very poor and working class neighborhood. My next door neighbors, some of my best friends, they were white people. They were going through the same struggles that we were. On the other side, it was, Mexican Americans. And then, my mother started dating a gentleman who was very pro-black. He came with the Black Panther type rhetoric, and that's kind of the lens through which he viewed the girl. One thing my mom did that kind of helped shape me the way I am now, she raised me to be very smart and to seek knowledge and to read a lot. She raised me to be successful. She wanted me to make a lot of money and to be a success. But on the other hand, she was very distrustful of very wealthy people and billionaires. So she was one of those who was, son, go out and do the right thing, make your money the right way. Don't go out and sell your soul for $1 billion. If you go out and you make something of yourself, come back home and pay it forward to the people who kind of helped you get to where you're going. And that's kind of how I live my life. That's why I went back home and opened up my law firm for the first 6 years versus just going to the city. But then also, seeing all the Black Lives Matter stuff and seeing those people lose their lives to all those police in such short spans of time, that was very rousing emotionally. That kind of got me caught up in that movement for a little while. But I quickly realized that it was a lot of spin by the media and the people who I felt like who should have been doing something about it on the Democrat side. They were silent. And so that's when I really realized that, hey, I don't think this is a Democrat Republican type thing. I think it's just like a war of ideologies. Who's actually acting on behalf of the people? Who's not? And then the main thing is, and this is the biggest tool that I have to help change other people's minds, is, my love for history, my love for American history in particular. And then my favorite portion of American history is the Reconstruction era. And so when you study about abolition and the abolitionist movement, and you look at America through this lens, at least as far as being a Black man, now I look at America through this lens of, we were brought over here, but, it was part of this bigger transactional machine type thing. It was economically driven.
Yep.
Absolutely, there were some people who were mean and hateful about it, but it was economically driven. You had people over here in America who hated it from day one. Those people don't get mentioned at all in history. In my household, we never talked about the John Browns. We never talked about the Charles Sumners. All we talked about were the people who were evil and mean.
Yep.
We had to have this boogeyman, this villain. And what I teach my kids and why they look at this country different is I teach them more about the struggle of abolition and in a more united front. So, we obviously, our ancestors were suffering the brunt of, chattel slavery.
Yep.
But we had people who were escaping. We had free Blacks in this country since its founding, right? There were free Blacks in the North. There were Black slave owners in the South. that I researched and found out.
People don't want to talk about that part.
Yeah, some of the worst slave owners in the South were down in New Orleans, and they were black people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And when you learn about the facts, it kind of opens up your mind. And then, too, I'm living in a world where the people who support my business don't look like me. The people who were trying to, you know, discourage me from even trying to go to law school, they look like me. Okay, I came up with those people. If you go look in my comments right now and look at the people who are trying to discourage me from even running, these are not white people. These are the people who look like me. Okay, yep. These are Democrats. Okay, and so I've learned just through life experience and kind of always being the underdog that you can't really judge a book by its cover. When they tell you to look left, you got to look right too, you know, just to make sure you're not being led astray. But like I said, every page I turned as I'm reading about the abolition and these abolitionists and how they gave their lives and they died to help us not only get free by just helping us escape from slavery outright, but once we got enough people free, you had people like Fred Douglass who had become literate. They welcomed him in and created a new political party so that we would have the political power and the clout in the organization to pass the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments.
Yep.
And you know, I haven't seen any victories like that for the black community in America since then. Okay.
And yeah, so, that's true.
You know, when I look in terms of Democrat wins versus Republican wins, it's not even an argument for me. You know what I mean? I think we absolutely belong back with the party that we helped found.
Yep.
You know, when we locked arms with good patriots in this country, you're going to have extremists and hateful people on both sides. But we've proven it that when we lock arms with good people, regardless of what their color is, yep, we win as Americans. Okay. And we get progress. And I think when people understand that and when they look at American history through that lens, it puts those hateful racist people on an island by themselves. That's not American. Okay. And that's what this America First movement is. It's for all people, all colors, all creeds. But if you're coming here and you're wanting to hate another American for the color of their skin or for whatever superficial reason, then this America First movement isn't for you. You got to go find another movement.
You know, that's truly inspiring because it speaks to a similar experience that I have. And that I was taught when I was raised or I was conditioned to believe that enemies were people was based off of their, you know, way that they were born and not necessarily, you know, the content of their character or how it is that they treat you. And so my experiences clashed with what I was being raised to believe, you know, so to speak. And it's interesting you also say that because I travel to Dallas a lot. I have a lot of friends over in Dallas. And the interesting thing about Dallas is that Dallas is a pretty liberal place. And I didn't realize that Dallas, I didn't even realize that it was certain places in Texas that was as liberal as it is. But Dallas is pretty liberal. Also, the mayor of Dallas recently came out during the past election and said that he was changing his party. How do you navigate through a space where the majority of the people tend to vote a certain way and not necessarily vote based off of the policies, whatever it is that the person is representing, how it is that he's looking to actually improve the community or work in his districts and help the people to become more successful and not lean on identity politics or a traditional mindset to vote a certain way just because that's the way that they've always voted. How do you navigate through that whole gauntlet of liberal city, you know, all of that type of stuff?
You know, my first job is letting people know that I actually care about them. You know, when I go out and I campaign, I'm knocking doors. I'm doing it the old school way. I'm not a very rich man. I don't have Soros money behind me. But what I do have is, you know, the work ethic. You know, God prepared me for this. My first job was selling Kirby vacuums door to door, and I did a pretty good job.
I did it too.
You know what I mean? And so I've waited the tables, and I've had to figure out ways of being able to connect with people on the fly. Okay, and figure out what matters to them and what they want and how I can best serve them. And I loved waiting tables. I loved tending bar. This is one of my favorite jobs. If I wasn't an attorney, I would probably have a restaurant or something and be in the service business. And just, I love making people feel good. And so I think that matters to people. There's something about that when you're running to represent people, when they know that you really do care about them. It's not even, it starts to transcend political party at some point during a lot of these conversations, because, you know, I'm finding people are saying things to me like, you know, the conversation starts off with, you know, what party are you with? If you're this, then get off my property. But, you know, a few minutes later, after I've broken through the ice, I've got them committing to give me one vote, to just give me one opportunity. You know, and it's not give this Republican an opportunity. It's give Sheldon an opportunity. Like, this kid is from here. Like, you know, he shops at the same streets. He's sung in the same choirs. He's giving Easter speeches at the same churches as my grandkids. Like, we need to give this young man an opportunity, because this is what we've hoped for. We've hoped that somebody would come out of this situation and go on to be able to do better things and then help us out. And that's what I am. That's what God has prepared me to be. And when I portray myself in that way to people and they're able to connect with me like that, it doesn't matter what party you're on. My policies are very common sense. You know, my opponent has made this race fairly simple when it comes to policy, because she's got no policy.
Right.
Okay. She's admitted that her whole shtick is criticism and dividing people and reminding people why they need to be outraged. My thing is solutions, uniting people, and reigniting people to want to get behind the American flag so we can win together. I mean, it's diametric opposites. You're either America first or you're not.
I was going to ask you what your thoughts were about Jasmine Crockett, because I don't necessarily look at her as a person that is putting forth policy or doing anything meaningful to change the narrative or even working with the current administration, because I think that that's important in order to get things done within your district or within the city that you serve. What do you think about Jasmine Crockett and her rhetoric, her recent rhetoric when it comes to Elon Musk, the Trump administration, people in general? What are your thoughts about what she's become versus how she's come into the game?
You know, first of all, she knows that she's not a good politician. Just fact of the matter, she's not good at the bare bone, like the pragmatic parts of the job, like the practical parts of the job, coming up with good legislation, you know, building coalitions, getting laws passed, working them through committee and making ideas go from just an idea to reality. She's never really done that. She does a good job of, like, you know, pretending and putting on this show. But I think what that's done is that's alienated her, obviously, away from Republicans, but even within her own party. I've been to D.C. twice since I announced my run. I just got back earlier this week. I was there for 4 days. And the general areas, Jasmine Crockett is kind of wacky, right? In her own party, the majority of people in the Democratic Party don't even really take her seriously. And so her only means for existence at this point is to raise money for the Democratic Party after they failed abysmally in this past general election. They need a young firebrand to get out there and kind of ruffle feathers and say whatever to stay in the headlines. Jasmine, you know, was more than happy to sign up for that role because, again, she's not here really to serve the people. She's here to play politics, play these political games, so long as her personal brand is furthered. And so people see that now. You know, she's come out and said all the things that I was saying when I first announced and people were criticizing me. You can't say she just got her first job because she was black woman. And now she's come out and admitted that she got her first job because she was black. She didn't know anything, didn't have any experience. And now those same people have to eat their words. And it's the same when it comes to the policy. I said she's never passed the law. And in fact, every time she's been given a position in leadership, she's failed. Like, she's tanked. She's left the organization or the district or whoever worse off than they were than when she came in. But, you know, on the left, it's weird. It's like they tend to fail upwards. But, you know, they've also never, you know, you got this new wave of young black conservatives, particularly young black conservatives, who now we're getting in the fight. And it's hard for them to use all those old racist tropes against us the way that they can use against, say, like a young white conservative who were trying to run in TX30. You can't call me a sellout. My wife is black. You can't call me an Uncle Tom because I spent my whole life fighting for everybody, black, white, Mexican, everybody. You know what I mean? And so all those things that they traditionally try to use, they can't use against me. They're calling me this unicorn candidate, and they're trying to get me to throw my support behind her. Which just goes to show, you know, they like my policies and they like my style.
Are they really?
Too. Yeah, it's just a matter of control. Absolutely. Yeah, her people, you know, they come into my DMs and they come to my events and they say, well, why don't you want to work with her? Why don't you work alongside her? Why are you trying to tear the black woman down? And I'm just like, you know, our
Oh,
policy,
no, you got to be kidding me.
yeah, look at her voting record. I would absolutely vote opposite. Everything she's done, I would have voted the opposite. So there's no way for us to work together. It's impossible.
What do you think about, because you know that kind of underscores the another question that I kind of had in the back of my mind and that I've always been curious about, because again, you know, getting a peek behind the curtain and seeing how politics truly work. I mean, you know, we all have an assumption. We all, you know, from the outside looking in as just voters, we all have an assumption. But, you know, working within and seeing how things operate, how do you keep yourself, let's say hypothetically, right, for the sake of conversation, that it's a shoo-in, you win, you get the position, you wind up becoming a part of the Congress and everything. Like, how do you worry about being tainted? Because it seems like the longer that people remain in some of these positions, a lot of times they become a shell of what they campaign for. I recently watched the video of Nancy Pelosi back in 95, 96, where she was advocating for the exact same thing that Trump is implementing today as far as tariffs. Do you worry about, you know, kind of the behind the scenes or becoming a part of the establishment once you get in the door, you know, obviously assuming that you get in the door?
Absolutely not. You know, I've never fallen victim to that. Give me one second. Hey, my laptop's about to die. Bring a charger. I'm so sorry.
No, that's
I've been on
real. I
this thing.
like that. I like that.
Bring a charger for the laptop.
That means you're a real human being.
Right? No, so no, to answer your question, absolutely not. You know, I don't have any fears of that. Luckily, you know, I've had a little bit of a taste of all these different lifestyles. Like I've been around the famous rappers and the famous entertainers. I've had an opportunity of representing someone in the entertainment industry, seeing that fame, seeing how they make that fast money and the private jets and all that up close, just close enough to know that that's not something that I want for myself. Also, I'm just You know, I realized a long time ago, and I was raised to be like this, that fame and all those things, the materialism, right, and the things that glitter. To put it simply, I was raised to understand that everything that glitters isn't gold. And so, you know what I mean? And I have people that I actually care about what they think about me. I'm still very grounded in my community. And just some things I just couldn't live with myself because I know what it looks like when you've alienated yourself from your parents, from your cousins, all the people that you grew up loving because you chose material or you chose fame and fortune, and now you can't come home for Thanksgiving. You know, I would rather be able to come home for Thanksgiving for the rest of my life and, you know, be respectable and, you know, have people show up to my funeral and actually be thankful that I lived my life the way that I lived, as opposed to building some castle or some fortress out there and having a bunch of fake rich friends. That's not the life that I envision for myself.
It's almost like it seems like once somebody becomes a Congress member or something, it's almost like a license to print money or something, because for whatever reason, they wind up becoming super successful and more successful than if they were, you know, regular everyday citizens and they had to go into corporate America or something like that. What do you think about the Department of Government Efficiency
I love
and
it.
all of the fraud, waste, and abuse that they're uncovering? And, you know, how liberals or people that are a part of the Democrat Party are kind of reacting to that.
I love it. I love Doge. I love the cuts. I love the transparency. I love the fact that people are getting to actually like bring it down to a ground level. What do my tax dollars actually pay for? For so long, I know when I was a kid, it was, hey, you're driving on the roads, right? Pay the money. Right, you go on an airplane and it doesn't crash, right? So just pay the money and don't ask any more questions. But now that we've actually, you know, we got someone in there asking the questions, and we're realizing that essentially we're being robbed because our roads aren't being improved. And you know, I look up and these planes don't look any better in 2025 than they did when I was a kid. You know what I mean? And so, where has the money actually been going? That's the most important thing. And if I am elected, that's one of my main priorities. Where has the money been going? And then we want to hold the people accountable who've been ripping this country off. It's not enough to just expose them in the media. These people need to be held accountable.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that there's a lot of issues that we shouldn't even be divided on. You know, when I think about, because I would imagine, you know, people in Texas were highly impacted by what was happening during the last 4 years as far as illegal migrants coming into the country and, you know, seeing that the federal government was literally suing Texas to open up your borders. And, you know, as far as, well, she likes to call them Governor Hot Wheels. But I think that you guys have probably the best governor in the United States of America. What do you think about the divisiveness? Because again, I don't believe that every issue should be a Republican versus a Democrat issue. I don't know where we became divided as far as, protecting our borders or making sure that our schools are funded and things like that. What do you think about the divisiveness? I mean, even in my own chat, obviously there's people that say, Anton, why do you tear down a black woman? Because I believe in masculinity. Do you think that it is something else that's at play? Is it something bigger that's at play that's dividing us? Because every issue is a man versus woman, Republican versus Democrat. When I think that it's certain things that we probably should be aligned on. I mean, I don't think right. that we should export our jobs to other countries that should be here for Americans. What do you think about all of that?
No, I absolutely agree. I think that there are bigger forces at play. You know, we have bigger problems in this country than, you know, man versus woman or these sports issues or whatever. There's something called globalism, and globalism is, you know, hold on, let me plug this laptop.
No, go ahead. Now. Take your time. Do your thing.
All right, we're back. Okay, so globalism, you know, there are people in this world who want, you know, one world government. That's the easiest way I could put it. They feel like, you know, for various reasons, some people think that it's a good thing, some a bad thing. But for whatever reason, there are people who they don't want to see an America as it exists, in a France and a Mexico. They don't want to see all these different nationalities and all these people who are clinging to this idea of what it means to be an American, or say like a French person or a German. They want to melt all that stuff away. They want to melt away the borders. They want this young generation to not even really know what it means to be an American, to not remember what it was like when America was great. They want this disconnect, right? Because I can remember when I was a kid, and I'm sure you can remember too. You know, when we were children, we were connected to our elders. I was connected to my parents. We could laugh at a lot of the same jokes, and that was because there was like this overlap. I watched a lot of the same TV shows that they watched. I laughed at the same jokes. I knew a lot of the same stars and celebrities that they knew. But nowadays, you look at it, I don't know anything about the stuff that my kid is into. I don't know any of these people. I cannot relate. And there is this disconnect, and that's by design. You look at all the divisive rhetoric from the radical left or the so-called progressives. They're not even calling themselves Democrats anymore. It's by design. You know, so long as we can keep people divided and at each other's throats, you know, they don't unite under that American flag. They don't work to make America great. They don't
protect
themselves.
That's crazy to me. Yeah, that truly is crazy, because I see people saying that they stand with China or they stand with Mexico. And I'm like, because, you know, back in my day, and I was born in 1982 and raised in the 90s, like it was all still like America first. Like, listen, it's almost like arguing with your brother. Like, me and my brother can fight, but you can't talk about him. And it's a different dynamic today.
Yeah, so they don't want that. They don't want Americans feeling like that. They don't want us having that affinity, you know, and they've done a good job of convincing a large block of our population to literally hate this country. I mean, anything that we try and do, they are opposed to it before they even hear the full idea, and they think they're on the side of right. And this is why, you know, I don't hate these people. I'm not even really angry at these people. These people just need to be reminded of what it looks like when we do come together, right? When we do lock arms and when we do win. And that's what my campaign is really about. I'm not really running on Democrat, Republican. I'm running on America first. It just so happens that my values and my principles and my ideals, policy-wise, align with the Republican platform. I'm big on individual freedoms. I'm big on individual rights. I'm big on small central government. And then all the other powers that aren't given to the federal government under the Constitution, that's up to the states and up to your local government. But this requires a little bit of personal responsibility and accountability. You have to do the research. You have to know who your people are that you're electing. You can't get away with this just vote blue no matter who stuff anymore if you want the world to change. And I think that's what people are realizing.
Yeah, I agree. Final question, because I know that you have to go. And I hopefully I can get you back on a show.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, because this is great conversation. I think that local elections and local politics actually is more impactful and is more important than even what happens on a national level. I know the national level get all of the visibility and all of the promotional dollars and everything like that. But local elections, people tend not to participate as much as they do in national elections, right? How do you convince people, especially younger people, to get engaged, to find out who, what's going on? Even in a national election, I find that it's a lot of people, they don't understand the millages. They don't understand the judges that's being elected. They don't understand even who's in their district or who's over what's going on from a congressional perspective. How do you get people more engaged? I know you said that you were hitting the streets and, you was doing it old school. Do you think that there's a lack of, I don't want to say information, because the information and the knowledge is more accessible.
Right.
It's almost like people become disinterested if it's not a major election year. How do you get people to
Right.
participate more in local politics and then get more engaged so that they can understand the difference between a you and a Jasmine Crockett?
So I get the little bit of influence that I've been blessed to attain. I have to use that influence to highlight platforms like this. Like, we can't all be in a hurry to go to the big platforms and want to talk about the big salacious headlines like national news. You have to pay attention to the local outlets too, and the people who are investigating, the local issues, and help those people get a bigger platform. And so that's another difference between myself and my opponent. Whereas, she's racing to get to a red carpet. I'm much more comfortable and much more interested in talking to, say, like a local journalist that is in tune with the beat of the local community. They can inform me about issues that are actually affecting me and my neighbors right here on the ground. And so we have to make those local issues sexier. We have to make getting involved in the process more fun. That's kind of the culture with my campaign. We actually just signed a lease on a new HQ in a very bustling area in TX30. And part of that space is to show people the culture of what we're trying to bring. Like, it's fun to be involved. It's fun to be empowered, not just involved, but empowered, because that's what these people want. They want to be empowered. They go to these protests and they go online and they emote online because they want to be heard. And when you make the connection for them that, hey, when you elect someone who actually aligns with your values, not just the party that you subscribe to, and not just being co-signed by this celebrity that you listen to their music, but do the research. Who's gonna vote in your place when they have the opportunity? And when you do things like that, win or lose, when you work to elect someone who is aligned with your policies, it just feels good. It feels honest and clean, and that's how the process is supposed to go.
Listen, I'm a fan, and not just because we have the same last name, but because I am a huge supporter of men doing the thing that's in the best interest of the community. And more importantly, I think that you are like really communicating the values and the things that I think actually changes the narrative and the dynamic of what happens within certain cities. I'm a fan. Hopefully, I can also come and visit you down there in Texas,
Bring
because
it.
again, I like to travel back and forth to Dallas a little bit. But more importantly, is there any final message that you would want to leave with the people prior to us, going off and then hopefully coming back at some other point so that we can have more conversations?
First, let me ask you, where are you from? Where are you based out
I am
of?
from Detroit, Michigan. I
Okay, so
got a
that's where you moved.
lot of friends, a lot of followers down in Texas.
Okay. Well, cool. Next time I'm in Detroit, which I love Detroit, by the way, I didn't know you could just walk across a bridge and get to Canada and do all that type of cool stuff.
Literally
But yeah.
15 minutes. I look at Canada every single day.
Absolutely. Whenever you come down, look me up. Love to take you around, get you some birria tacos or some steak or barbecue, whatever you're into. But, I want to leave the listeners with this thing just about me. Just a lot of people are saying a lot of things about both of us, myself and my opponent, but I just want you to hear it from me. I didn't get into this race to go viral. I got into this thing because I've seen what it's like when a district like mine goes ignored, and I know what's possible when a real leader shows up with a plan and when people get behind them. And so I'm not asking for blind support. This is an extremely winnable race that I'm running. I'm really asking for a chance to prove that America's not dead yet, that good is not dead yet, that common sense and courage and real opportunity can still win. And so if you support that, if you believe in this America First movement, then, you know, let's build something together. You can visit me online at danielsforus.com. You can sign up to volunteer. Please donate to the campaign so we can keep this machine going. But just know that I'm running to bring real representation to D.C. in 2026.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sheldon Daniels, thank you. I appreciate you for coming on the show, my friend.
Thank you.
And you are definitely invited back anytime you want to come on, anytime you want to discuss anything, anytime you want to get a message out to the people. You are always welcome to come and use this platform, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on.